What's up and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. This episode of Ahead of the Curve is brought to you by New Era. New Era is the official headwear provider of the MLB, NFL, and NBA. If you love to rock New Era caps as much as I do, then you don't want to miss this opportunity to wear what the players wear and get 15% off when you go to neweracap.com/AOTC and use code AOTC at checkout. That's 15% off your order using promo code AOTC. On today's show, we have on Tyler Latorre, head baseball coach at Westmont College in California. Tyler was in his first year leading his team this past season and led them to their first ever NAIA National Championship. The Warriors went 48-9 last season, which culminated in a 7-6 victory over Lewis and Clark State in the 66th NAIA World Series. Latorre came to Westmont from Sacramento State, where he served as the pitching and catching coach, and he previously coached at San Jose State and San Francisco State. While at San Jose State, Latorre was honored as both the 2018 San Jose Assistant Coach of the Year and the 2019 Fellowship of Christian Athletes Coach of the Year. On the show, we discuss last year's national championship run, how they are attacking the transition from NAIA to Division II, and we go over lessons learned in his first season that set them up for success. You're going to love this episode with Tyler Latorre. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan.
Definitely. Well, I'm excited to obviously learn from you today and get to see inside the mind of you and your program, and excited to dig apart what you guys were able to do last year and trying to replicate again this year. And with that, I told you that we're having a couple of national champs in a row, and you're obviously in that series of coaches over the last couple of weeks to be able to do that and call that and raise the trophy and end on a win. And I just want to know, tell us about that team. Tell us about what separated them, and give us an inside look into the season and what you felt like what separated them from other teams you've had or other teams across the country.
Yeah, sure. The unique experience that Westmont baseball went through over the last 18 months was the previous head coach, Robert Ruiz, who had been here for 14 years, decided to become the athletic director. The university and our athletic department decided to make the transition from NAIA to Division II, and we're going through that process right now. But the athletic department needed a full-time athletic director, and Robert filled that role, and his first hire was hiring me in the summer of 2022. So I came into a program that had the previous year had gone to the NAIA World Series for the first time in school history. They had had success over the last several seasons, culminating in their first opportunity to go to the World Series. Unfortunately, it was going there and losing the first two games. So we returned a lot of those players, and that was the backbone of our success that culminated with this championship in June of 2023. But it wasn't something that was everything was laid out perfectly for us. They had a new head coach. I was a first time head coach. I had been an assistant for my whole career prior to it. So the fall was up and down, and a new voice, a new leader, a new way of describing maybe the same morals, the same standards, the same expectations from the previous head coach, with a different delivery and a different head coach. There were some ups and downs with getting a lot of returners on board. But that group was special. It still is special. We've got a lot of returners from last year, but we did graduate 16 seniors from that national championship team. So over the course of the season, we continued to grow, continued to learn, continue to play baseball the way that we had talked about it. And it took a little bit of time of actually doing it in the beginning part of the year. So it was a gradual, continual progression throughout the season of us just continuing to play good baseball and better baseball each and every week. which culminated in us making a tremendous run in all the playoffs. We ran through our conference tournament. We swept through the regional tournament and then went 6-1 in Lewiston. So it was a special postseason run, but it wasn't something that, you know, just it wasn't lucky. It was something that was built.
Oh, I love that. And so this is awesome because you're first year head coach and you win a national championship. Like,
yeah,
that's awesome.
I don't know where to go from here. I don't know where we go from here. I guess everything not culminating in a national championship is considered a maybe possibly a negative. The only caveat is now we have a full Division II schedule this year. And we have two years of not being postseason eligible. Now we still have some players in this. We still have some players in this program that know what it takes to win. And so we're also a part of the National Christian Colleges Association of America. And so there's a potential national championship within that. There's a lot of schools that I know of that have gone through this transition and won national championships through the NCCAA. You know, it is a cool transition to go from NAIA and go out on top to now going to NCAA Division II.
Oh, I love that. So yeah, that was like something that I know that you've been ruminating on in the last 365 days, because I can only imagine being in that position. And the other thing, so I was doing some research. We have a coach on staff who's from Oxnard. And I was like, okay. I know this is a really good school, and I know that they won a national championship. I said, tell me a little bit about it. And he goes, the only thing I know is it's a really good school, and that Oprah has a house in like the neighborhood. Is that true?
Yeah. So we're up in the hills. We're up in the hills of Montecito, overlooking Santa Barbara. So you've got a lot of
love that
a lot of famous people that live in and around this area. But it is a very, very special place. And we're a non-denominational Christian college, and our population is about 1200 students. The baseball team, our athletic department is very strong, in all of its sports. So it's a really cool place to go to work every day. I am nowhere near, feeling that I'm the, best coach on campus. We've got a lot of incredible coaches who have been here for a long time. So every day for me going to work, is that growth mindset of taking a lot of information from, a lot of the coaches that have been here and done it. And so there's no resting on my laurels of what we did last year. We are continuing to push this program forward.
Well, that's awesome. Well, let's get into that. And you talked about, you know, the foundation being laid and then, you know, you continuing the tradition and keeping the standards up and then it ending with a win at the end of the year, which we're all striving for. So talk to us about, you know, you've got your players on campus. This is more of a player development podcast than necessarily recruiting. And we can talk a little bit about that if you want. But I want to know, like, when you get guys on campus in August, what do you guys start with? What do you guys, as time restrictions go, like, how are you utilizing the first couple of months on the fall and then, you know, getting into some preseason stuff after that?
Yeah. So we have a little bit of a lot of different aspects from last fall to this fall. One being the transition from NAIA to NCAA. So NAIA is unlimited practice time. Unlimited practice days. The only thing that we are bound by is the number of weeks that we can put in the fall. So when you transition into Division II in the NCAA, now we have to have 2 days off a week. We're only allowed to be with the team for 15 hours of that week. Weightlifting counts. Any type of practice, any type of skill development, any type of video review, anytime that we talk to the players about baseball, that's considered time. That is used towards that 15 hours. So we have a new way of a new rhythm to practice and maximizing the time, the transition time from offense to defense, from base running to playing catch, from BP to the end of practice. There's new rhythm. So our returning players kind of have, you know, a little bit of a sense of the urgency, the attention to detail of the practices that we run here, with a little bit of a nuance of knowing that we can't practice from, 2 o'clock in the afternoon all the way to darkness, because you can only practice for a certain amount of hours a day and a certain amount of hours a week. So that in and of itself was a different transition and a different rhythm to the entire fall. The other side of that is we did bring in a quite large freshman class of 20 freshmen. We lost 16 seniors of last year's team, and we're making that transition from NAI to Division II. So over half of our roster are new players, and most of that is freshmen. We brought in 3 transfers, 2 junior college transfers, and a Division I transfer. So most of our roster is new. So that first week of school, I wanted our players to be together and not have the almost the structure or the intensity of starting practice that early. So there was a lot of, hey, the field's open, get to know each other, go hit in the cages, play catch out on the field. That first week of school was a lot of players being with players without the, feeling like they had to perform in front of coaches or the not the fear, but just the overall aspect of what it would be like to start a practice just out the gate of over half of a team being brand new to this campus, along with the school. And we have chapel 3 days a week, and school is incredibly hard here. I'm not incredibly hard. I wouldn't say that, but it is strenuous on the student athlete's time. So that first week was a lot of getting to know player to player through the recruiting process. Obviously, the coach to player relationship of an incoming player is vitally important to us, because we want them to, we want each player to know exactly what they're getting themselves into, whether it's the communication, the standards, the expectations, what they should be looking for, time management, study hall, communicating with professors and other individuals on campus, and with an endless respect and just preparedness. And I think that was huge for that first week to happen. And then I also thought it was important to just build trust. So those next few weeks are a lot of individual small group settings of infielders with infielders and outfielders with outfielders, smaller hitting groups, pitchers going through their progression and getting to know each other, but also observations from our coaching staff, building relationships so that change and growth can happen with the intention of our players having a net to fall on if it doesn't work out, and having that development process start with building trust and having an expectation level of the development process that happens here at Westmont. So that I felt like that was a good start for our program heading to this Division II transition, was for the guys to get to know each other. They're going to spend more time with each other. And one of the things we talk about in the recruiting process is our players are our biggest recruiting tool. Mm-hmm. Our players are going to spend the most time together than family to family. It is a family in and of itself. So creating those relationships, creating those bonds through adversity, through successes, through failures is something that we strive through as a coaching staff, but also sure. as a program, because when you come to Westmont, it's an all encompassed school, education, religion, athletics. It's all encompassed into one, and there has to be balance within that.
No, I really like that a lot. And, so you go from having unlimited time to now very limited time. What did you cut out? So you think, okay, I've got all of these different things to be able to do with unlimited time, and now you've got a very limited time. So you obviously had to cut some things out. What were we'll say this. What are the things that you focused on most? So even on field, so you talked about bringing them in, making sure that they're getting closer as a team, and you're introducing your basically all of your players to each other again, because you lost so many mm-hmm. guys. And helping them through mm-hmm. this transition to this time, because now again, their whole schedules are messed up. But like, what has been your main pillars this fall to really focus on the on-field stuff. So let's say, you know, like for me right now, one of the things that we transitioned to, we have really good weather this month and we're going to have really terrible weather next month. So we transitioned to some more team defense on the field that we know that we won't be able to probably do very often next month. So that was like a transition that, well, we'll see. So, but with that, like there's always stuff that you, like we don't have unlimited time and you have only limited time and unlimited time in the day. So really, what did you focus on or what are you continuing to focus on this fall to make sure you guys feel ready for game one?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost is getting a buy-in to continuing to get better each and every day, no matter what practice is like, the weather is like, whatever class schedule is like. And I think our players are bought into being a good teammate and what being a good teammate looks like. And so having some things cut out of practice because of time was a lot of preparation on our coaching staff side of building out systems and a plan so that players could get purposeful work done on their own. We weren't going to have the time, you know, last fall we would, you know, we'd have an hour of early hitting before the full team practice started. And then we would have a full team practice. That early hitting session is not there anymore. We would have opportunities to go from base running to catch play to individual defense to team defense. Some of those days where the individual defense needed to be done on their own based on their class schedule. So building out systems and giving our players the tools to say, hey, this is going to help you in your own personal development. And there's going to be some days where you're going to have to build a routine to where you're getting your work in because you know that we're not going to be doing it at practice. And there's a level of accountability when you do get to the team practice setting of, if I don't do the work that I need, one of the things we talk about is there is no extra work to be good at baseball. It is the work that it takes to be good at this game. So the extra hitting, the extra ground balls, that's not extra. That's the norm. And so if we're at a team setting and we're doing cuts and relays, or we're doing bunt plays, or we're doing any type of team defense that you throw out there, that anybody across the country is doing, a lot of that individual work that you are doing on your own is going to show when you get to the team setting, and you're going to be letting your teammates down if you haven't put in that work that it takes to come out there and have everything run smoothly. Now, there's also an expectation level here with our coaching staff that we have 20 freshmen that there's going to be ups and downs. And so preparing them for things that are going to happen in a game, in a practice, in a high speed, intense practice, and allowing them the freedom to make mistakes is also important. I'm not in any sense of the word feeling like this team is at its best right now, in anywhere a perfect essence. However, I do feel like we are moving and continuing to grow as a team. So there wasn't a lot of, you know, there wasn't a lot of yelling or holding players accountable to things that we haven't gone over yet or things that we'll continue to iron out. There was just a lot of intensity of just being there for a teammate. And the older guys know that they play a huge role in the development of the younger players. And that's something that's gone on here for a really long time. So as a coach, your preparedness of communication and just letting your players know that, like, these are the expectations at practice. In order for us to get what we need to get done in a short amount of time, we have to have good transitions. We have to have focus, and we have to put everything that we can out there to not only put yourself in the best position to help this team progress and grow and grow yourself, but also be there for your teammates so that you're that net to fall on if we do have something negative happen out on the field.
Sure. Well, let's rewind a little bit because I think that there's a lot of value in this question, and that's, you know, you took over and this is your first head coaching job and a lot of the players knew you. And so, I want to know, was there any moment that you were like, okay, this is now I've got to flip the switch from assistant to head. And then that's question number one. So I'm pepper you with two, but sorry.
Okay.
The second one is, what were some things that you established early on that made it feel like yours, that you felt like were very important in the 365 days to now? So like you reflected back and you're like, man, I'm really glad that I did X, Y, or Z. Or it could be something bad. You're like, we tried this and it didn't work and we had to immediately cut it out or whatever that is. But anything come to mind with those?
Yeah, a couple things come to mind. And as an assistant coach, and I was an assistant coach for some great mentors that were head coaches. So taking in a lot of my previous experiences, whether it was playing in pro ball or coaching at the collegiate level, that's pretty much been my life for the last 20 years, is every individual player and every team is going to be a little bit different, and trying and thinking that you need to do something a certain way will not allow the team to have the growth that you're looking for. And so over the course, this, like you said, the 365 days and the reflection back, is I expected a certain level of attention to detail from what I had experienced through the process of getting interviewed here with our athletic director, who is very process driven, who's very attention to detail. But there is also that instance of the players not ultimately knowing if I'm the same, if I have the same expectation level. And that fall last year, there was a lot of conversations with older players, and just getting to know them and feeling like I had fallen short on developing the relationship with them to allow them to feel that they could be themselves with having the knowledge that I, having the knowledge of they were doing it the way that I wanted it to be done. And ultimately this game, I want our players to go out there and play with a lot of freedom for freedom from failure, from fear, freedom from the negativity that can come with this sport. And those things are constantly talked about within our program of, hey, there's a lot of talk about the fear of failure in baseball is it's a game of failure. And I don't believe that this is a game of failure. I feel like this is a game of opportunity and adjustment. And within that, I feel that whether we always talk one pitch at a time, one pitch at a time. So if you feel like you lost that pitch as a player, it's a benefit to the other player, right? So if you're going up against someone and there's a success, there's a failure on the other side. And if there's a failure on one side, there's a success on the other side. So it's a 50-50 proposition if you think about it that way and not feel like, oh, I'm going to hit and I'm only going to get a hit 3 out of 10 times. Well, we want to win pitches and we want to win at bats. And I may go 0-for-1, but my at bat was a benefit to the team. And my pitching, you know, my inning, I may have given up a run, but I got through the inning. That was a really tough inning. But I didn't allow myself to give in because I knew that if we had to bring in another pitcher for that, I couldn't clean up, that would have put more stress on the bullpen. And I think having those conversations with players and just developing a baseball IQ of understanding that no matter what is going on, that play and that pitch at that moment is the most important thing. And I think reflecting back and circling back to your original question is I felt like I didn't explain that properly in the essence of we're going to practice hard so that the game is easier, so that the game can come to you rather than feeling like we have to make things happen, that we have to do everything perfectly. This game is not meant to be played perfectly. You can make the right pitch at the right time and give up a homer or give up a single. You can throw the wrong pitch at the wrong time and the guy pops it up to the infield. So this game is not perfect. Coaches are really far away from being perfect, just as much as the players. So I felt like I fell short in the fall last year of providing information to the players of what my vision of moving forward was. And when we got to the season, it felt like it changed. Obviously playing a different team and not playing against yourself and inner squads can change that. But having conversations with players and giving them the confidence to go out there and play freely and not feel like every pitch was weighing on their on themselves, or every pitch was, indicative of if they were going to play the next day or not, and just being about the team and making sure that hitters left the situation better for the teammate that was hitting behind them, or the pitching staff that was putting themselves into positions to be successful for the team. And as we went through the season, it just continued to grow and grow and grow. And everybody continued to believe in each other and believed in the way that we were playing. And that's what culminated in what that season was. So we try to do that with, with every team, but it's a little bit different every year, in my opinion. And so this season, this fall was a little bit different with a lot of newer players, and just having a little further conversation, because I feel that a lot of 18 to 22 year olds, or and maybe even high school players, the comparison game is something that is a detriment to a lot of players. And comparing yourself to your teammates, and comparing yourself to other players that are getting recruited, or comparing yourself to other players on other teams, that it takes you away from how great this game could be for you if you focus on what you can do and what you're doing, and putting yourself in the best position to be the best teammate possible for the program. And hitting on that every single day has been something that I've been trying to do, and glorify the little victories that are happening within our program of freshmen overcoming some of the things that they had struggled with in the first couple weeks of practice, and are continuing to grow. They might not see it on the field yet, but pushing them and allowing them to see and feel that there's people that believe in them, and people and coaches and teammates that believe in them, even though they might be struggling, there's still lack of a better term, a light at the end of the tunnel.
It's so interesting that, have you ever read Twin Thieves, by the way?
Oh yeah.
The book Twin Thieves. Okay. That was one that really hit home with me this past year, and that I haven't had the players read it specifically, but I've been taking a lot of content to it. And for those listening who haven't read it, it talks about like the fear of failure and the fear of judgment being just paralyzing to, it probably was for us too, but now everything is broadcast on social media, and they feel like, it's so easy to send a hateful text or to comment in a hateful way, even much more than it was when 20 years ago. That one is really good. And or were there anything specific that you felt like really resonated with them? You had these conversations and you talked with them about it. Was there anything else that you'd like to add specifically to, like, if, and the reason I ask this is because if we can get our players to, act and be fearless, which I think is almost impossible, but something that we're striving towards every day, then they're immediately going to be the best versions of themselves, which in return, they become the best versions for the team, and the team becomes really good. But anything specifically you'd like to share that we could steal from you that you felt like was impactful?
Yeah, I think having more baseball conversations was the start. There's a lot of, especially at a college where you've got, you've essentially what we have on our roster is a group of the best players on their high school team that are now figuring out that they, felt like they were the best player on their high school team, and now they're getting here and they're not the best player anymore. And having the self-awareness to understand, okay, like I thought I was pretty good at baseball, and now I'm figuring out that I've got a lot of work to do. And there's also a lot of, whether it's the way that amateur baseball and the way that travel ball and high school baseball, there's that friction of practice versus games. And some players are just playing games all the time and doing showcases and not playing, not playing the game of baseball and understanding why things happen for whatever reason. I think the start was having conversations about baseball, why we were practicing this and why we were doing, bunt plays or team defense, why we were doing it a certain way, and giving them explanation so that it's not just doing it because coach told me to do it. There's an investment of, okay, I'm going to do it this way because I know the reason why and how it's going to affect us now and moving forward. I think that was a huge step for us as a program in continuing on the traditions and the expectation level of what this program has been for a lot of players. And it's bigger than baseball, to be honest with you, but just on the field, having those baseball conversations, and the fall is perfect for that too, to segue it into watching you know, the World Series and the MLB playoffs is you've got a bunch of youngsters now that are just watching the highlights and they're not actually watching the game. So I think it started with having baseball conversations of why and how and how it's going to affect you as a person, but how it's going to affect the team, because I think ultimately players don't want to let their teammates down. And so if you can make it more about the team, and specifically, you know, with hitters making it not so much about the results, but you know, how it's going to impact the game and on the pitching side, like how your actions and how you react, because as a pitcher, mm-hmm. once the ball leaves your hand, you have no control over what happens after that. The only thing you have control over is how you react to it, whether it's a ball or strike or a ball hit, a run scored or an out. How you react to those moments is who you are as a person and shows your true mm-hmm. character of your selflessness. So having those conversations of how winning baseball is played, and that's up to discussion. But for us, winning baseball is, and the Warrior baseball way is as a pitcher, your goal is to limit free 90s. So whether it's walks, hit by pitches, you know, maybe getting bit falling behind in the count and having to throw, you know, something out over the plate where a fastball is going to get hit. We try to limit free 90s. On the defensive side, we try to limit extra 90s. So obviously we're going to make errors, but not allowing ourselves to stay within, you know, the confines of the game and feel like you have to make up for the error that you previously made, have to make up for maybe someone else's error or make up for the pitcher giving up a free 90. So on defense, we are trying to limit extra 90s, 90 foot victories. And then on the offensive side, it's all about pressure. Our hitting philosophy is to lead the country in doubles. And doubles is not hitting the ball off the wall and running to second base and doing a double celebration. A double is wind's blowing in, tough pitcher on the mound, third baseman's playing too far back, laying down a bunt, and then stealing second base. That's a double. Getting hit by a pitch and reading a ball on dirt and getting to second base, that's a double. Understanding that the center fielder is playing a little bit deep and a little bit towards left center and reading a blooper, going to shallow right field and going first to third, that's a double. So we glorify those things. We talk about those things consistently so that players understand what affects winning for us. And it has nothing to do with the other team and what the other team is doing. We are trying to apply pressure, whether that's consistently throwing strikes and playing suffocating defense or putting pressure on the defense on the offensive side of knowing that we're going to take every extra 90 and every opportunity for us to push the intensity level on the defense. And so those are things that we talk about every single day. And so it allows your player to understand what they can do to impact the game, whether they're 0 for 10, 10 for 10, tough pitcher on the mound, tough hitter in the box, wind blowing in, 100 degrees outside, pouring rain. All those things are out of our control. What is in our control is that pitch right now and being focused on what you can do personally to impact the game in that moment.
No, I love that. And, you know, we talk a lot here about having, like, being on offense on all phases of the game. And I don't know that oh, yeah. makes necessarily a lot of sense, but I love the pressure aspect of it. And even on defense, like making sure that we're in attack mode and you want the baseball and, you know, just trying to make sure that they're, like I said, on offense in all phases of the game. And so with that, you know, it's that time of year that we're transitioning from off season to now more of like a preseason, and, you know, winter break coming up for you. So tell us about right. how you're winning this time period. And, you know, you probably only have your players still on campus?
Yeah, we have finals next week. Tomorrow's the last day of school. Yep.
Okay. And then, so tell us a little bit about how you guys are going to win the break when you can't really work with your players at all. Did you give them yep. different things to do, throwing programs, all of that stuff? And then when you get back, what your first month focus is going to be?
Sure. So we, as soon as we got done with our fall, we shifted our mindset. And a lot of the fall is a transitionary period for obviously newer players, but also, we're playing and practicing and inter squatting while also lifting weight. So we shifted the focus and we started lifting 4 days a week, since the fall got over in early November. And we just made it a part of our culture to separate ourselves in the weight room and push each other. Everybody has the same amount of hours. Everybody has very similar team defenses and practice schedules and practice planning. And, you know, maybe someone else has, you know, some type of like earth shattering hitting philosophy or hitting trick. But for the most part, everybody has something very similar. And so what we try to do is we try to separate ourselves in the weight room. And we really kind of set the culture for this last month and a half of putting a good base underneath so that understanding that the next 2 months is going to set yourself up for a 50 game schedule. And a lot of these new players have no idea what it's like to play from January to June every single week, playing 4 games a weekend and adding in school and travel and bus rides and plane rides to that. So just reiterating that this is not a time that is a time to take a step back. And every time you wake up in the morning, you have a chance to get better or get worse. There's no staying the same, because if you have aspirations of playing at a high level of baseball, somebody else is having those aspirations too. So if you feel like you're going to stay the same, someone else is getting better. So we've set that culture of getting after it in the weight room, and we have smaller groups that are lifting together, and we try to make it a little bit more. I think the fall can get a little bit away from us, and pitchers are always with pitchers and position players are always with position players. So we try to break up those groups and try to get players from other position groups, pitchers, you know, with some outfielders and infielders that are, you know, maybe not on the field. They don't get to interact as much. Now, off the field at a small college like this, we do have a pretty tight knit group, but we try to make those lifting groups, maybe someone that you haven't really interacted with as much, pushing them on the baseball field. So we've done that. And then over the break, we have the ability to have a group me. That's the app that we use to have communication within our program. And there will be either one or two players a day that will post a video of them working out, hitting, going on a trip, whatever they're doing that day, and then just letting people know that the program's still important to them and keeping them connected and having, you know, consistent conversations and communication of pushing each other to know that when we get back January 8th, we have 3.5 weeks before we put our uniform back on and play against another team. And having the thought process of, oh, we have 3.5 weeks in January. I can stay inside today and watch a bunch of football, or I can rest today. That's just not the case, because when we get back, we need to hit the ground running, and we need to have a consistent group of players that are headstrong and know what it's going to take to have a successful wire to wire season of playing Westmont Warrior baseball.
Oh, I love that. I think I'm going to steal your idea, especially of posting stuff in the group chat, whatever the group chat is. Because I feel like, sure, you know, players are afraid to, because sometimes they get blown up for the text change in the group text apps of doing stupid stuff, especially when rivalry games are going on. But I really like that idea, because like, we've got a coach getting married. I'm going to be going to New York. I'm sure players are all doing all kinds of different stuff. And then we're going to be going to the ABCA, which, hopefully you're there and we can get a coffee together. Are you going to be going?
Yeah.
Sweet.
We will be there. Yes. Yes. It's a good spot.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that I won't miss, because I have FOMO of missing. So I'm going to try my best to make sure I don't miss, just because I don't want to see everybody else posting about how they didn't miss.
I look forward to it every year. Yep.
So yeah, it's a good time.
I think it's a good idea. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Like you said, like showing your as a coach, sometimes players only get that on the field aspect of who you are. So I plan on, you know, putting in trips. I'm not going on any trips, but, you know, I do have a 7-year-old daughter. So, you know, I already, you know, kind of continually post what I'm doing. My daughter was in the ballet this last weekend doing the Nutcracker. So, you know, I was sitting through 3 hours of the Nutcracker posted a pic in our group chat of saying, hey, if you guys have daughters someday, this is what you have to look forward to when Michigan's playing Iowa and Alabama's playing Georgia. You're going to be doing this if you decide to have kids later on in your life. So these are the sacrifices you have to make. So just showing that vulnerability and showing that opportunity to connect with your players, just not on the field all the time is is something that I strive to do. I think that's important to my own philosophy of just being a part of these players' lives. And that notion of value is important. Obviously the Friday night pitcher, the starting shortstop, starting catcher, the starting center fielder, they have a lot of value to the team, more value maybe to the team than the freshman that's redshirting or the backup to the backup first baseman. But the value that they have as a person to this program is all the same. Mm-hmm. So that notion of value is something that I truly take to heart of getting to know our players on so many different levels and not just baseball. I think is really important to us in this program.
For sure. No doubt. So let's get into some of the nitty gritty of the season. So tell us a little bit about, you talked about your preseason. Tell us about, what are some things, like you've got a 7-day, normal week schedule for, mm-hmm. However many games you guys play a week and you've got your rest days. So kind of walk us through, you're in the middle of the season, you guys are playing well, everything's going good. What would like a 7-day routine look like for you guys? And then how are you winning the days? Cause game day, I'd like to hear about, some different routines that you guys are doing and then you play the game.
Sure.
But how are you, what does a 7-day routine look like? And just kind of walk us through that.
Yeah. I think the best place to start is we always have Sundays off. Being at a religious school, our conference actually doesn't play any games on Sunday. So we play doubleheader Friday, doubleheader Saturday. So if we get off of a doubleheader Saturday, we don't have lights on our field. So we'll have the rest of Saturday off. Sunday is off as well to recoup the body. Monday, is a conversation, of, what went right. What are some things that we can improve upon? And then some of those things that we want to improve upon of putting the game plan in, Monday to address those, whether it's addressing some of those things that day on the field, whether it's addressing it, gradually throughout the week, maybe talking about, the opponent that we have coming up and how maybe their style, maybe is different than the previous week, or just having conversations about, potential matchups that we would have in the upcoming week. But Monday is a team practice day of maybe installing a different bunt play, a new bunt play, a new first and third. We don't have a lot of bunt plays. We don't have a lot of first and third plays, but I don't think that 3 weeks coming back and even sometimes in the fall, implementing all those things and spending a lot of the time that maybe we've done in the past or other teams do of spending a lot of time in the fall of going over all these bunt plays when you're going to have to redo them and kind of reteach it in January. Sure. So like we install, those first few weeks of the season, we're installing as the season's going on. So it doesn't feel like it's too much all at once. Mm-hmm. So Monday might be an install day of a verbal pick play, a timing pick play, a first and third defense, a first and third offense. Hey, this is what we're going to implement this offensive play, this week, or we're going to work on this aspect of our game. Hey, we're not hitting for as much power as we normally have. Like we need to, let's kind of go back and retalk about maybe safety squeeze, and what that looks like offensively. Let's work on some hit and runs to jumpstart our offense. Some of those things would happen on a Monday. Tuesday, you have your, is usually a day where we have pitchers throw that maybe didn't pitch the weekend before, and we'll inter squad on that Tuesday. And it's an opportunity for maybe some players to kind of get right if they're not feeling good at the plate, but also allow some of the players that haven't been playing as consistently throughout the weekend, and allow them to get that game sense. And then Wednesday would be another one of those ironing out team defense and making sure that everything's good defensively. And then Thursday is a super light day of batting practice and batting practice rotations and just getting as light of a day as possible, but also an opportunity for guys to iron some things out on the offensive side and in smaller groups. Sometimes when you have the larger group out there, it's almost like hurry up, we've got to get through practice because we're on a certain amount of time, or daylight, we're ruining daylight to those instances. I really, getting back to what I said about maybe talking about the upcoming team, there's not a lot of conversation that goes into maybe scouting reports or putting in a lot of emphasis on the team that we're going to play that weekend. I really, really want our guys to focus on what we do and how we go about winning baseball games. And if we take care of our bit, the way that we do things, and it doesn't come out on our end and we lose, like I'll be okay with it. But as soon as we start looking to the other dugout and trying to combat what they may be doing to us, or, you know, making it about them, like that's something that I think is almost a precursor to having those low lows of a losing streak or just not playing your type of baseball. I felt that over the course of last year, we didn't really have any of those until when we were in Lewiston playing in the World Series, and we played the number one team, Southeastern, they were consensus number one throughout the whole entire season. And I feel like that first game against them, it was an elimination game for them, but not for us. So if we would have beat them, we would have knocked them out, but they beat us. So we had to play them again the following day. And I felt like that was the first time in a really long time that we were playing the opponent, not playing our game. And there was a few texts that went out the night before we beat him the next day after that game we lost to him. And it was just about getting back to who we are and what we had accomplished and what this team had accomplished, and to see our players respond and go out there and beat them the next day. And then obviously the following day after that, go and beat Lewis and Clark State for the national championship. It just shows the resiliency of that group. But I also feel like it can be used in general of just an overall thought process with our entire program of just making it about us, make it about you, make it about what we do. And if it doesn't work out and we control those variables of what we can do, it'll set yourself up for those, you know, to be very even keel and not have those high highs where you go in those long winning streaks, but also have long losing streaks as a team, have those, you know, those great at bats where you're 4-for-4 and then have an 0-for-4. It just allows you to have a little bit more level and a little bit more balance within the game. We do a lot of just making sure that we handle our business.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm with you, and it doesn't matter what the other dugout is saying in those instances either, because that's a thing.
No doubt, that's a real thing. And there's a lot of rivalries on this West Coast with some of these teams that we play against every single year, and with travel ball and high school baseball being so prevalent out here in California, we have guys that have played against each other for a really long time, and those rivalries build up. And so, having the ability to focus on what you need to do and how you're going to do it is really important to our program and our players.
For sure. Yeah, no, I love that. So, you know, I've got a couple of different things. Did you change anything from the season to prepare for the postseason, or did you guys just plug along?
There was a couple of things that happened when we got to postseason. We weren't playing those doubleheaders like we were in the season. So, we had one catcher that pretty much caught, you know, all the time. And then we kind of flip flopped our rotation once we got to the World Series too, just because of matchup purposes with the other team. And we had three starters that pretty much started every single weekend the whole entire year. So we just flip flopped someone that our number three, the pitcher that was throwing game three ended up throwing game two of the World Series. One of those reasons was because of the longevity of maybe the number three guy could go a little bit further than the number two guy. But if we did have if we would have lost game two and been in an elimination game, we have a fifth year senior that's our number two that's now pitching game number three. So there was a little bit of gamesmanship within there, but we about three quarters worth the season through the season, we settled on a lineup. Everybody kind of knew their roles. It was nothing that we outwardly talked about, but guys kind of, you know, figured out where they were hitting in the lineup, where guys would move around, who pinch ran for who late, who came in defensively late. They were all prepared. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier about just having those baseball conversations of why we do things, how we're doing it. And then guys started becoming more aware of what the gameplay was like and then being prepared for those, you know, those moments in the game where we were either pinch hitting, pinch running, bringing in someone on defense, bringing in someone from the bullpen. They were prepared for it. And they were almost more focused, which was really, really cool to see. But there was a lot less, a lot less action for those, for those everyday guys. There was also some time off in between weeks. You know, like when we won the conference tournament, there was about a week and a half before we played in a regional. And then once you win the regional, there's another week and a half off. So I was making sure that our guys were still lifting and still pushing it. I know it's not the best thing that you can do is feel like, man, I'm so broke down. I've been playing 60 games and, you know, the last thing I want to do is wake up early in the morning and go lift. But we allowed our players to understand like this is going to help you and continue to keep you healthy. So, you know, that maybe that some of those starters were, were taking a little bit of a break, but for the bench players and some of those guys that we knew we needed to lean on, if in case of injuries or longevity in a doubleheader or, you know, backs against the wall and we're playing every single day in an elimination game, pushing those players to just continue to improve and know what it was going to take. If you don't have to get ready if you are ready. And so a lot of our bench players, they were pushing themselves to make sure that if something happened and they had an opportunity to impact the game, they're ready for it. I have a perfect example is we had a player, we had a player named Daniel Patterson. He's one of our returners. He's a junior this year. And I don't think he played for probably about a month. He's a right-handed hitter. We had the infield. He's an infielder. So our infield was set with seniors. He was platooning a little bit at first base when we faced a lefty, maybe, you know, pinch running. But we didn't face a left-handed pitcher for a really long time. And I think it was about a month and he came in and I had no, like zero problems with or any worry of DHing him, actually playing him at first base in the World Series against a left-handed pitcher from William Carey. And he didn't even bat an eye because I knew the work that he was putting in every single day. And if it wouldn't have worked out and he would have gone up there and fallen on his face and struck out four times, I still would have loved him just as much in his preparation. But the players still had belief in him because they saw his work every single day. And it wasn't the stuff that he was doing, in the game. It was the stuff that he was doing to prepare himself for the game and the practice leading up and just his attitude and energy every single day. And as a bench player, like you have to bring it. And because you never know when it's going to be your opportunity. And I felt like our players in general knew that if they did get that opportunity, they were going to be ready for it.
No, that's awesome. And I love it when it seems like every season there's that instance at least once, at least on good teams and the seasons that you have. But I feel like I can count. If I looked back on years, I could think of at least one on every single season that it's like that. And so it gives us motivation. Well, it gives us ammo to keep those kids motivated too, because it's not an easy spot to be in at all.
100% agree with you. Yep, totally. And then you have the teams that maybe you have high aspirations and you have some injuries and that's the excuse, right? You know, like we should have been really, really good, but we had those injuries and that's the excuse rather than knowing, hey, there's going to be times where guys aren't going to be at their best or guys are going to get injured. It's that next up mentality with, you know, if you're going to be that next man up, it can't be waiting for that opportunity to then put in the work. It needs to be, I'm going to prepare myself so that I don't have any excuses or any regrets when I do get my opportunity. And I think having those conversations with your players and letting them know like, hey, I know you haven't been playing a lot, but your consistency every single day at practice is something that I know for a fact that when your opportunity comes, it's going to be you. And I want it to be you. And I know that you are pushing every single day so that you are prepared for it. And I think it's something that good teams become great teams because of it. And then those average teams that don't have that and make excuses, they go the other direction really quick when things don't go their way.
No, I love it. And I, you know, I couldn't agree more with that. And so I've got a couple quick hitters for you before you go. Some stuff that we can hopefully steal from you. And the first one is, what's a drill that your players love that we can steal from you?
Yeah, I've a couple come to mind. The first one is on the hitting side. So we talk a lot about the cage is for mechanics, batting practice is for approach, and the game is for competing. And our players know that if they're in the box in a game or an inner squad, and it looks like they're, you know, the wheels are turning and they're thinking about mechanics, like they will be called up about it. Like their teammates will like, hey, like get the mechanic, like lock in. One of the drills, two drills that we do in the batting practice side, the first one is the, we call it the Freddie Freeman drill. And Freddie Freeman had an interview a while back where he tries to hit, when he's taking batting practice, he tries to hit like 50 balls from the left. He's a left-handed hitter. So from left center field to the left field foul line, he tries to hit low line drives, I guess low fly balls that are underneath the lights, and nothing that hits the ground. And he doesn't move on until he finishes whatever number that is. So when we do Freddie Freeman drill, it's usually 10. So our guys go from the opposite field gap to the opposite field foul line, and they try to hit low line drives, hard hit balls, maybe with a little bit of air underneath it, or one hop through the infield, like power ground balls. And they don't get to move on until they have 10 of those. So we'll do rounds of five, and they'll count them out, and they figure out where they need to be in a good position to drive the ball the other way. And then we go gap to gap. After that, Freddie Freeman talked about going from the opposite field gap to the foul line, and then going gap to gap. On our field, we have two logos kind of set up in the middle of the field, and we just go between the logos, and we don't move on until we've hit line drives or one hop through the infield balls that end up being between the logos. And then the last set is base hits. So using the whole field, and usually when you start this drill, everybody, as soon as they get to hits, it all goes to pull. And then, you know, they're hooking balls and flaring balls the other way. And it's like, okay, well, you just got to this point to have freedom. Why would you take away some of those middle of the field approach, middle the other way approach. So the goal is to try to do that in as least amount of swings as possible. So you usually do it based on time. There's some other variables to that where you do it as a group. You know, your group is trying to do it in the quickest amount of times. And if you do it in the quickest amount of times, you get an extra three rounds of five at the end of batting practice. So there's an incentive of, okay, if you do it in less swings, you get more swings at the end. There was a video I saw a long time ago about Freddie Freeman drill. The other one that the guys, I think some of them like it. I think some guys don't like it. is it seems to me that BP is almost getting a feel for your swing where, you know, if you have a round of five, a round of six, like the first swing is just kind of loose and, you know, like not really, you know, concentrated. And then the second swing gets a little bit better. And then the third swing gets a little bit better. And by the fifth swing, it's like, now I've got my swing locked in, and the game doesn't do that. Sometimes that first pitch or sometimes that first swing needs to be ready to go. We started implementing a drill where we're going to do five rounds of one, and you got to get into the bat. You got to get into the bubble on the field batting practice, and you're going to get one swing, and you're going to get one swing. Now I don't want you to, like, we're focused on hitting strikes, and we're focused on where, you know, what zones we're looking for. But when you get into a box in the game, like, you have to step into that box ready to hit. Cause that, you know, early on in the bat, like sometimes if you foul off a good pitch to hit, you might not get another good pitch to hit. So, we'll do five rounds of one, and then, it goes pretty quickly. But what we're tracking for is we're just tracking for barrels. And the teammates hold them accountable. right? So it's a sound that you hear. It's the ball flight that you see. And if you get a plus, then that goes towards the rest of your rounds. And if you get a minus, that takes away from the rest of your rounds. So if we go five rounds of one, and then our next rounds are going to be three rounds of five. So the next three rounds, whatever your barrels or whatever is deemed a quality swing in those one pitch rounds. Let's say, for instance, I get four out of my first five. I hit on the barrel with good ball flight. My mm-hmm. next three rounds are going to be three rounds of four. Okay. And if I only get one of those, then I get three rounds of one. And I better be ready to go. And it's almost like an accountability of when I step foot in that box, I need to be ready to hit. And so that's a drill that I don't remember why it came to me or if I did see it from somebody. So I can't take credit for it and I can't give credit for it. I just don't know how, I don't know if I saw it one time or not. But it over the course of time, you see those, you know, you're hitting on the field off a breaking ball machine and the breaking ball machine is dominated for like maybe the first few swings. And then all of a sudden they get the timing down and then now they feel good about it. Like mm-hmm. the game doesn't feel like that. The game isn't like that. Like you need to get into the box ready to go. And if we can train that, and if we can have the mindset of like, every time that I have an opportunity to hit the ball, I'm going to be prepared for it. And I don't have time to, you know, push the ball the other way and get my timing down. Like there's no time for that. Like you, sure. as soon as you step foot in the box, like you have to be ready to go. And so that was one of those drills that has helped that.
I love it. What is the latest thing that you've learned that's made you better at your job?
There's multiple ways to communicate to each individual on your team. I could be talking to one of our players one way, and I could try to duplicate that with another player on the team, and it lands incredibly different. And that kind of comes out and comes to fruition when you're talking hitting out on the field with one player, and then the player that comes in after them is trying to duplicate what you just told the player before. It just doesn't work, right? And they're frustrated because they're not getting the same success that the other player is getting. And I think that goes back into what you mentioned at the beginning of our talk today is obviously we had a really good year last year and we won a national championship and you try to duplicate that, right? And I know that last week you talked to the Angelo State head coach about mm-hmm. this as well. You try to duplicate some things, but I don't think duplicating your previous successes is always the correct thing to do. You have to have an awareness of who your audience is and where they're at today. If having some awareness of almost a bird's eye view and rather than an up close microscopic view mm-hmm. of what's 5 feet in front of you, I think pulling back and zooming out is the best thing that you can do as a coach. And this fall has done that a lot for me because we do have a lot of players that are coming in from different programs, different high school programs, different travel programs that maybe preaching the same things, just saying it a little bit differently. So this fall, I asked a lot more questions and I don't feel like I need to have all the answers. I just need to hopefully push these guys, our players, in the correct direction as it pertains to who they are as a person, who they are as a growing man of faith, and who they're ultimately going to be, you know, 20, 30 years from now. But what can we do today to help them be the best teammate possible? And mm-hmm. having the bird's eye view and being able to zoom out on how you're communicating each and every day to every person on the roster is something that obviously it's really hard to do. But our players deserve it. Our players deserve clear and concise vision and clear and concise communication. And that's going to be different player. That's going to be different player to player. And it's our job as coaches to set a standard and and build a culture. Ultimately, culture is not something that's written on a wall or on a t-shirt. It's something that the players feel when they walk into the field every day or just walking around campus in general. Of what mm-hmm. it takes to be a part of our program and what that culture feels like. It's something that you continually feel every day. And as a coach, your goal is to live that out vicariously through your players, but also live it out as a testament to to who you are and what your character is, and being authentic to that. I think being authentic to who each coach and who each player is vitally important. So one thing that I've learned over the course of this fall was just being able to communicate concisely and productively with each and every player on our roster.
I love it. And then I've got one final question for you.
Yes.
And you may have already answered this, since this wasn't that long ago, but what's one thing that you've implemented in your program that you feel like has made the biggest impact on your program?
We changed from having team captains last year. It was something that before I took over the job, the captains were already picked before I got here. They were great. But we have a leadership council now that's made up of five. We're at five players right now that we actually yesterday were talking about maybe adding some younger players to help develop their leadership skills. But I think having that leadership council and meeting with them once a week and just pouring into them and not telling, you know, it's not like a players calling, you know, calling each other out and with me, it has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with snitching on teammates. It has everything to do with building those players up so that they can be positive leaders on the team. But ultimately you want a team of all leaders. And I think when it comes from players and it isn't always drilled home from coaches and it's not always me as the coach, it comes from the players. I think that accountability goes a little bit further. And so we implemented a leadership council, if you will. We don't call it the leadership council. We meet once a week with some leaders on the team that have good pulse of what's going on. And I answer questions and challenge them to be the best leaders that they can be and grow them. You know, I'm constantly sending them, you know, quotes and tweets and leadership talks and just giving them the tools to ultimately lead this team. It has nothing to do with me and what my agenda is. This program is only going to go as far as our players that are driving it. And so, having that leadership council and not feeling like the team captains quote in quotation marks feel like there's, you know, all of, you know, you have a roster of 40 to 45 players and you've got two captains that feel like there's a lot of weight on their shoulders, that they can have conversations with, you know, almost a council and just speak their minds and grow. And I think it's worked out really, really well. So that's one of the things I think we've done.
I love that. So, man, this has been awesome so far. And Tyler, I'm really appreciative of you coming on and sharing so much and giving us
a
really good look inside your program. But I did want to leave you with the opportunity to just talk to our guests. And if there's anything else that you'd like to tell them or anything else that you'd like to talk with me, I'm going to mute myself and then let you roll.
Yeah, I think I think what you do, Jonathan, and just I've been a huge fan of your podcast and listened to all for years. The amount of coaches, whether it's a professional coach, a high school coach, a travel ball coach, a college coach, at all the levels of collegiate baseball. I think as coaches, it's important to have resources. And what I mean by that is for everybody that's listening and wants more explanation, or more insight, further description, don't hesitate to reach out. My email address is on our Westmont Warrior Baseball website. But don't hesitate to reach out. And I think having opportunities to share information with each other, I think is the only way that this game continues to grow. Nothing that I feel like we've implemented in our program is something that is my own. It's not proprietary. It's something that I've experienced over the course of my time in baseball and podcasts like this one. And so, Jonathan, I just appreciate you allowing me to share Westmont baseball and what we do both on the field and off the field to be good stewards of this game, but also be, you know, show our faith in our Christian lifestyle. And I just appreciate you giving us the time and the platform to share information so that we can all grow. There's a lot of negativity that happens in the game of baseball, especially, you know, on social media. So if we can continue to grow, whether you feel like it's right or wrong, if we can continue to just grow, because ultimately it's our players and it's our It's our game that we want to continue to drive. So I appreciate you allowing me to be a part of this.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.